This podcast is in no way affiliated with the upcoming production or Deborah Harkness. All views expressed are solely our own.
It begins with absence and desire. It begins with blood and fear. It begins with the discovery of witches.
Welcome to episode 17 of the All Souls Podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer.
It's so good to be back talking about our favorite witch and vampire. But before we get to our chapter, Summer, are there any announcements since the last time we recorded?
Announcements. We just talked about this and it's been like 5 seconds and I've already forgotten it.
Oh, yeah. So nothing official like dates and places and times, but a little or a big, beautiful Instagram post happened not too recently, pretty recently.
I mean, to be honest, as a book lover, it's way more important than any series announcements that have come out, mostly because we still don't have a distributor for the US. So because we don't have a distributor for the US, I'm way more excited to hear that the book that Deborah Harkness has been teasing that is coming out soon, the book about Marcus, and I believe his past, is going to the editor. Like, she's been posting pictures on Instagram of like pages and pages and pages and pages.
And this is so exciting because even though it may not come out like in the same week, which it won't, that we're talking about this, the content we're about to get into, as well as what Summer just mentioned of regarding the photos, the information we have from Deb and photos she posted on Instagram, this chapter, although it's not completely about him, could be subtitled Marcus.
Right?
Tons. I was like, okay, got it. Marcus, do you just want to take over now? Because it's all you, dude. But it's kind of cool. We get to see a little bit more into the mind and the workings of another vampire.
But it's a good week. It's a good week to move into that with a Marcus-themed novel coming to fruition. It's a good week to start this chapter, I think.
What are we doing in this episode?
This episode, we are discussing chapter 16 entitled...
They have no titles.
My title for this episode is in the theme of Hamilton, the musical, to be Lafayette. That's all I got.
You know, I had a few things like that. I'm taking this dumb by the reins and dumb the same.
You're fired.
Hey, I'm not awful if I just knew the words.
I didn't say you were awful, but just being awful is enough to be fired.
Funny. Okay, hold on a second. I'm taking this horse by the reins, making red coats redder with blood stains.
Lafayette!
I'm never going to stop until I make it up and burn him up and scatter the remains. I'm
Lafayette! Okay, it's enough. My whole point is this was Lafayette! Okay, this was the first chapter in this trilogy where I had a straight up like Hamilton reference. And I was like, ha ha, Marquis de Lafayette. I got really excited.
Oh gosh, we are excited. And oh my gosh, can you imagine if and when we do a read along for the Marcus book? Marcus book, it's going to be all about
Lafayette. But what if and it's other not? Things, like- How sad would it be if we got the Marcus book and we're like, oh, there's no Lafayette. Where's Hamilton?
That's true. There has to be some. It may not be like entrenched in there, but there has to be some reference to the Revolutionary War. That's my guess. But we'll see. We'll see in the not too distant future. In the last chapter, we left our witch and vamp together, the former having opened a delivery of a photo of her parents' slain bodies. The latter helping soothe and comfort her, care for her. Matthew's reaction and emotion, where Diana is concerned, are getting more keen. Quote, he noted the subtle changes of scent as her shock subsided, unquote. So the drop in the blood's adrenaline levels, correct? Because that's with the shock and the worry and the anxiety, the adrenaline shoots up. And now that that's going down because he tranked her, she's relaxing, forcibly, medically relaxing, but she does need it. He can tell the difference, the drop in that adrenaline, the drop in her change of hormones, etc., by scent. But we already knew this. He's very, vampires smell all the shiz. And, quote, a cold fierceness sweeping over him every time he thought of Peter Knox and Gillian Chamberlain. We know the answer. I'm not going to say what the answer is, but I'm going to ask you a question. maybe rhetorical because we don't want to spoil anything potentially, but I'm going to ask you a question later in the chapter about that line I just read. Okay, so by his own admission, Matthew has never felt this way before. Quote, Matthew couldn't remember when he'd felt so protective of another being, unquote. And he's not anxious to try and identify exact feelings he's experiencing. Quote, he felt other emotions as well that he was reluctant to acknowledge or name, unquote. And the more he told himself that she was a witch and that she wasn't for him, quote, the less it seemed to matter, unquote. So we pointed out, I mean, some of it's obvious, so maybe overkill, but Deb has pointed out, we've pointed out as we progress through this book and over the chapters, how his, his defenses, I mean, obviously they both have their defenses up, but little by little, they are lowering, whether they want them to or not, especially Matthew, right? He's like drawn to her like white on rice. I mean,
well, white on rice, but he also has like centuries of defenses.
Yeah.
Whereas she's got decades.
Very exactly. And very inexperienced. I mean, she knows the basic quote unquote rules, but decades of a lot of inexperience as a witch, quite frankly.
Right.
So he leaves her room and confronts the anger he's feeling, taking the Lazarus's coffin from around his neck. So he's holding on to that. Remember that. That comes up later in the chapter too. He wants to murder the offending witches. On his phone, he notices he's missed a few calls from Marcus, which wasn't normal. The message he listened to, quote, I have Diana's DNA results. They're surprising. Call me, unquote. Well, that's a little way to put it. Matthew calls Marcus to get the results and then picks up the picture from the bathroom floor. So all this time, he has been comforting, holding, tranquilizing, all the stuff, caring for Diana. He never actually saw the picture. He could trace its scent to its accompanying piece of paper. He picks that up too. He calls Marcus and tells him to bring the results to New College, to Diana's. When Marcus arrives, he has to hold himself in check. Not only Marcus, but the other vampires as well are noticing the territorialness of their main vamp. Marcus, quote, wasn't about to enter the witch's rooms without Matthew's permission.
Unquote. He's more than territorial. He's super aggressive and dangerous.
And Marcus is now battling his inner feelings. He'd never seen his father as angry as he was now. Matthew had changed. Marcus, we learn, in 1777. So this is the first time. We know there are more vampires than just Matthew. We know there's Marcus. We know there's Miriam. But we haven't got a lot of anyone's history, or maybe any of anyone's history, right? Yet. And to make up for that, shabam the wham, I'm going to give you all the Marcus. Marcus, we learn, had been in the Continental Army of the Revolutionary War. Matthew was a French officer, right? And he had been friends with the Marquis de Lafayette.
Lafayette!
I can't even say that now without laughing. When the latter was wounded and Matthew demanded that he be treated, Lafayette at one point had been wounded and he was like, oh, you know, when the doctors came in to help, he was like, no, go treat my men, go treat the men. And Matthew, when he saw this, was like, no, you're going to be treated. So Matthew was making sure that his friend was also looked out for. Now, once the battle died down a little bit, Matthew had Marcus stay on as his nurse. So Marcus was there in the camp. He was a soldier. Matthew stayed with the army after Lafayette returned to France. So here was this French officer, but, you know, they were allies, so that wasn't, I guess, too unusual. And he was there helping the Americans, helping the Continental Army. In Marcus, Matthew recognized a gift for healing. Now, after the Continental Army arrived in Yorktown in 1781, Marcus became ill. On his deathbed, Matthew stayed with him and shared his own story. He told him a story of blood and the impossibility of death. Matthew shared that he could change him, but for a price, change Marcus. That price was that he would have to drink blood. And Marcus was not necessarily convinced, but as he got closer to death, Marcus decided that, yes, he did want to live, even with that price, or for that price. Matthew carried Marcus into the woods, quote, where the Oneida waited to lead them into the mountains, unquote. Once they are safely away from the people, Matthew drained Marcus's blood, quote, in a remote hollow where no one could hear his screams, unquote.
Good Lord.
Let's stop right there. How does that sound?
So sexy.
Oh, not quite. Summer.
I think
he's almost dead. He's not having.
But the fact that he was almost dead and they still took him out of range of the town so he could be screaming.
Kidding.
I mean, that has to say something for what they know to be the process of turning.
It just means that Matthew is it means Matthew is that good.
No, it means he's not that good. If he was that good, Ginger, if he was that good, everyone for miles would have been like, that man is making that dude is
happy.
Super happy, sexually happy. He is doing all the right things and poking all the right buttons, as opposed to we need to get him outside of the confines of town so no one can hear him making the sounds of this dude is killing me and torturing me.
Then Matthew had, quote, slashed his own wrist with his teeth and let Marcus drink, unquote. Now, the whole time they're in like a cave. And at this point, the Oneida were waiting the whole time. They made sure that Marcus, in his new child vampire state, didn't endanger the nearby farms. So they knew what Matthew was and thus what Marcus was becoming. It was like a witch they called Dog Wanoenyant. And they knew how to kill such a creature. Burn him, grind his bones into powder, and disperse it into the four winds. So while Marcus was kind of coming into his own, learning how to live with his new body, his new self, Matthew watched over him, bringing him fresh food, and then he taught him to hunt on his own. Humans were only allowed once he'd successfully, human targets were only allowed once Marcus had successfully hunted deer on his own, with probably Matthew there, but that he physically did it on his own. Women were always off limits. First, it was British soldiers, and they could feed on them without killing them. He taught him that. And then criminals. Now, Matthew made Marcus, this is kind of ingenious, because it's not something that I could understand, like, choose, don't go to women. Like, I understand that kind of, like, black and white thing, agreement. But Matthew made Marcus, this is how a teacher works. This is a good teacher. Matthew made Marcus explain each time why a certain person was chosen. And this developed his ethics. So Marcus compares the face Matthew is making. So now back to Oxford. We get that. That's the gist of what we get about Marcus. Basically, his vampire genesis. Marcus compares the face Matthew is making this night in Oxford, we're back in Oxford with Diana, with the one he wore at Brandywine before the battle. Matthew thinks they've made a mistake, but Marcus, meaning the DNA results, but Marcus insists they've double-checked. Matthew says they're preposterous, but why would he say this? She possesses nearly every genetic marker they've ever seen in a witch. So obviously, since he thinks it's preposterous, they've never seen one person with all of these characteristics. Now, Marcus and Miriam are concerned about a number of sequences, and that's all kind of written up on the results. Matthew spills to Marcus about Peter Knox and the threat to Diana, the fact that Ashmole 782 is missing again, etc. And he says that Knox still thinks Diana broke the spell on purpose, but there's no way she has the knowledge or the training to do anything like that. He even mentions, as evidence, look, I have a hole in my rug caused by her electrical fire sparkles. That's my words, but it was the same meaning. Over and over, father, son, Deb is building this link for us, Marcus's connection to Matthew. Before this chapter, we did not get a father-son between them, did we, Sam? There was no father, there was no son, no addressing like that.
Nope, I'm with you.
Matthew shares the photo and the paper that came along with it, and the information about Diana's parents. And that because humans killed her parents, so she thought, she's tried to keep magic out of her life. And then she ends up putting a hole in someone's carpet because she can't contain herself. She can't control it.
That's only a very small portion of what she's done. She's done many things. Hasn't even begun to realize she's done to herself over the years.
Exactly. Matthew puts it well. There's clearly more to this situation than a witch's discovery of Ashmole 782. And that's true. But I like the way you put it. A witch's discovery. That's our title, friends. That's our title. Discovery of Witches. Marcus notices the Lazarus's coffin. We get some new information about our Matthew. Quote, no one in the family talked openly about Eleanor Saint-Léger for fear of driving Matthew into one of his rages. Unquote. Philippe, Matthew's father, recalled him from Paris in 1140 to Jerusalem, quote, to help resolve the conflicts that continued to plague the Holy Land long after the conclusion of Urban II's crusade, unquote. And he obeyed. He met Eleanor and got to know her family and fell in love. Okay, hold on a second. Matthew has a father. I love how she just slips it in right there. You're like, wait, who's Philippe? Oh, so that's what I mean. It's like, it's not says, oh, let me introduce you. There's this person who is his, you know, pseudo son, but, you know, made physically son. Then there's his father, Philippe. And then, you know what I mean? There's all this. We also learn that Matthew has brothers, Hugh, Godfrey, and Baldwin. And the de Clermonts were often at odds with the Saint-Légers. His brothers wanted him to leave Eleanor so they could destroy her family. But he refused. And here's where things go to pot. Quote, one day a squabble between Baldwin and Matthew over some petty political crisis involving the Saint-Légers spiraled out of control. Before Philippe could be found and made to stop it, Eleanor intervened. By the time Matthew and Baldwin came to their senses, she'd lost too much blood to recover. Unquote. So let's think about this. In just a few pages, Deb has introduced to us, albeit while telling another story, that Matthew has a father and three brothers. That Marcus is Matthew's son and how he came to be born a vampire. That's a lot to unpack. And as we already hinted at, makes us even more excited to get the Marcus book. We also get more insight into Matthew's character. He is highly moral, which we knew, but Marcus tells us that he has one of the strongest senses of right and wrong that he knows of. And we learn that he is unselfish in love, at least in one way. He refused, as she was dying and he could have saved her, he refused to make Eleanor into a vampire. And Matthew only wore the pilgrim's badge, that is the Lazarus's coffin, when he was afraid he was going to kill someone or when he was thinking of Eleanor Saint-Léger. Matthew brings it down to brass tacks. Diana is being threatened. She doesn't have the ability to protect herself, and she won't ask for help. He tells Marcus he's going to find Gillian Chamberlain. And when Marcus is like, wait, what? He says, there are two scents on the photo. The other one is Knox. And another info drop, quote, Peter Knox is a member of the congregation, unquote. What congregation, Deb? Deb explains. The 9-member council of demons, witches, and vampires that it formed during the Crusades, 3 representatives from each species. Its job was to ensure every creature's safety by seeing to it that no one caught the attention of humans, unquote. But Marcus still doesn't fully appreciate the depth and extent of Matthew's tie to Diana and tells him that if he moves against Knox, it could be taken as a threat to the congregation's authority. Then, to Matthew's face, he says, quote, this ridiculous romance is bad enough, unquote. And then, the congregation already has one reason to take steps against you. Don't give them another. We learn Marcus has a grandmother, so Matthew has a mother? She'd explained to Marcus that as a vampire, when they first met, he would be bound by a covenant that, quote, prohibited close relationships between different orders of creatures, as well as any meddling in human religion and politics. All other interactions with humans, including affairs of the heart, were to be avoided, but were permitted as long as they didn't lead to trouble, unquote. So does that sound like doublespeak to you? These things, including affairs of the heart, were to be avoided, but were permitted. I mean, it's kind of like, don't do it, but if you do, you know?
Oh, for sure. Like, it seems very convenient. Don't do it unless you have to do it, in which case we'll make it work. But, you know.
Yeah. Be careful. Yeah. But Marcus prefers spending time with vampires, so he's cool. Marcus realizes that Diana has absolutely no idea about the covenant and is shocked Matthew isn't planning to tell her.
She has less input on the covenant than she does on the rest of the larger issue.
Matthew's decision is made. He leaves. Marcus stays with Diana, checks on her, and discovers two things. I mean, he does more than just look in. He like listens to her pulse, like lifts up her eye. He's like checking out her because he's a physician as well, right? He went to med school and he's a scientist. So he is taking all the vitals. And of course, as a vampire, he can smell that. He knows what's going on. So he checks on her and discovers two things. One, that she would be fine. And number two, that his father's scent was all over her and that it had been done deliberately to mark her so that, quote, every vampire would know to whom she'd belonged, unquote.
What are your thoughts on that?
Okay.
Because he clearly did it against her will.
Oh, without asking her?
Yeah, without asking her.
The first thing that comes to my mind, although it's not a direct correlation, but makes me think of Jericho Barons in the form of a whatever peeing around what's her name.
Okay, here's the thing. I cannot allow you to make comparisons between the two because Jericho Barons was legitimately an effing animal. And
look.
No, but
Matthew
claims to not be an animal. He claims to be a person of, the words are gone, but he claims to be somebody who is not ruled by animalistic natures. He tries to claim to be
above that.
More. Yeah, totally.
But
so,
it doesn't mean that he feel it. And at times, I mean, this, if it was done on purpose, then yeah, he definitely did something he said or acts like he normally would be above doing. But I don't, okay. He did it, right? Deb said he did it, so he did it. I don't think it speaks badly of him because he's not doing it just for giggles, like, right, to say, oh, I'm attracted to you and blah, and it's so hard, but I want to not do it, but I'm going to do it. You know what I mean? He's not just doing it to say, this is my woman. He is doing it for the benefit of others because she's in legit danger. That's why he's doing it. Before then, he didn't do it. You know what I mean?
Sure. I'm with you.
And he thinks it was going to be difficult for Matthew to disentangle himself from Diana. And he was going to have to. We'll see how that goes, Marcus.
He won't, though, but.
Matthew returns after midnight. Matthew says he won't discuss the DNA findings with Diana. Quote, nor am I going to share what the witches of the congregation might do to her. She's been through enough. Unquote. Matthew is shielding her from information as well as protecting her physically. There's a lot, you know, I can see both sides of it. I see Marcus's side. Marcus is the audience admonishing the movie or TV screen. Quote, Diana Bishop is less fragile than you think. You have no right to keep that information to yourself if you're going to continue to spend time
Word.
With her.
What Boom. I have to say about Marcus at this point is that he is 100% a feminist and on her side, being like, don't underestimate her. You are doing her a disservice by assuming that she's not prepared for this. And I love that about Marcus.
Matthew has a very strong urge to hide things, we learn. It's stronger than most. He even hides things from his own family. Matthew wants the benefit of having Marcus involved just where he wants him, the DNA tests, watching over Diana as she sleeps, but doesn't treat him as a confidant. Quote, stay out of this, Marcus. It's not your business, unquote. But Marcus is right when he says, quote, your damned secrets are going to be the family's undoing, unquote. Now, Marcus had tried to uncover some of the secrets that Matthew had, but no bueno. For example, there was that time when, quote, Marcus was raising hell in New Orleans after Jefferson made the Louisiana Purchase. And by raising hell, he means he'd created his own vampire family in his own image.
For real, though.
And not of the, for the times, most savory peeps. They were so outrageous for, you know, for against, not in line with how the de Clermonts wanted, you know, how vampires agreed to behave. Because remember, Congregation, Covenant, don't get the attention of the humans. They were not quite following that, and they risked human discovery, and the city's witches made it clear they wanted his vamp family gone. But then Daddy showed up, quote, with a gorgeous and mixed-race vampire, Juliette Durand, unquote. They'd worked to bring Marcus's band under control, and they'd aligned with a, quote, foppish young French vampire in the Garden District who had implausibly golden hair and a streak of ruthlessness as wide as the Mississippi, unquote. Now, even though we've read this and I know who Juliette was, I don't know what happens to Juliette, seeing the actress Ilarica, I mean, is she not the most perfect Juliette?
Here's the thing. I never envisioned Juliette in that manner, but I love that interpretation of her, and I'm totally on board.
Well, but I just read she's mixed race.
For sure.
You just had no, like, physical image. Correct. Of what that meant.
And I, got when it. They put her on there, I was like, super on board, let's go.
Juliette, the most manipulative creature Marcus had ever met, would cozy up to Matthew, encouraging him. He was happy, Marcus was, when they parted ways. Marcus promised to behave if Matthew and Juliette left, with this admonition to Marcus, quote, if you are determined to make me a grandfather, take more care, unquote. How's that for a birds and the bees talk?
Take more care. I'm going to use that on my daughter.
I don't think that's a good thing.
I'll find a way. I'll find a way to make that work. Take more care.
He did not know what gave them the authority to act as they did. And by them, he means the de Clermonts, but namely his father. Quote, every creature in New Orleans, even the witches, had treated his father like royalty, unquote. At one point, he wondered if Matthew had been a member of the congregation. Then Matthew tempers what he said earlier. Diana doesn't need to know everything right now. So now he's no longer saying she's not going to find out, but not right now, which I think is more reasonable, a little more reasonable. She doesn't know about the vampire family or his other children or Matthew's father, let alone his mother. Quote, I don't tell other vampires tales, unquote. And that kind of mirrors what Miriam said, right? In the library. Marcus agrees with Hamish. Tell her while you can. If, when she finds out you've been keeping things from her, that could be a problem. Matthew says he'll tell her everything when she's ready. But for now, he wants her to get out of Oxford alive.
Will he, though?
Yeah, who knows? I do get that, like, okay, the when she's ready or whatever, I think his, at this moment, even though for him, he may not have an intention, he may truly not want her to know, whatever. We don't necessarily know what's in his mind. But I think actually Marcus and you and me and the reader can get on board with, let's get her out of Woodstock. I'm sorry, let's get her out of Oxford. Because that is the most important thing. Once they're out, then like everything else can be discussed. We can figure out what's going to happen and blah, blah, blah. Matthew had had Marcus bring his passport along with the DNA results. And Marcus thinks that he'll just be taking off again because apparently, it is Matthew's pattern to when he has a blow up, he disappears for months, even years to, you know, until he can come to himself or, you know, get over it, whatever it is, to work through whatever he has to do. Because usually his rages lead to someone getting hurt, he said. But he says he has no intention of leaving Diana. He is taking her to Setour.
He's super smitten, y'all.
And even though we are not saying what Setour is yet, in it, like, that place will never go away.
It's coming. Next episode.
So I'm going to make an odd, I don't think it's odd, an interesting analogy here, ish. So when you and I were getting into Voyager and talking about, you know, like, oh, you know, when we, Ian is, you know, kidnapped or whatever, there are a few spots, like right when she's about to go back and we, Ian is kidnapped. And then when they're on the boat on the Artemis, whatever, there are several times when you can say, oh my gosh, it's starting, right? Like the adventure is truly starting. With this plan to go to Cette Tour, it is gaining legs. Marcus freaks out. What about Isabeau? This is Matthew's mother, who's killed loads of witches, boasts about it, and blames them all for what happened to Louisa and Philippe. Now, we don't know about Louisa yet, and we don't know, I guess we do know that Philippe, we know he has a dad, but I think it's been mentioned that Philippe is his father. Marcus understands. The photo had reminded Matthew of his own father's death and Isabeau's battle with madness. Matthew says she's, Diana, is not related to those incidents and that his mom will survive. Marcus isn't too sure. He really thinks so. So now what is being set up, regardless of what Matthew says, what the reader is being set up with is there's a Philippe and there's brothers and there's an Isabeau and there's a place called Cette Tour. We're going to go. We're going to see what's happening. And Isabeau, really, she's very dangerous to witches because she is anti-witch. She's not a fan. And she's killed a number. But on the other hand, we also learn that Matthew is her favorite. That'll get you a lot. Cette Tour is the safest place for Diana, he says. He wants Marcus and Miriam to move into the gatehouse to hopefully convince people that Diana is there. It might at least gain them some time. He tells Marcus to take some things from her apartment, for example, her duvet, which has her scent on it, to Woodstock. Matthew, although decided about Diana, wasn't invulnerable. After Marcus leaves, we learn through Deb, quote, Marcus's vehement opposition had shaken him, unquote. And there was a poem that is referenced twice in the chapter. This second reference, quote, I saw her coming from the forest, huntress of myself, beloved Diana, unquote. So it's a poem, of course, about the goddess of the hunt, Diana, and of course, relaying it to him, his situation, and Diana. Diana, still asleep in the other room, cries out. He goes to her, quote, the protectiveness returned, and with it, a renewed sense of purpose, unquote. Diana is his purpose. I'm here, he murmured against the rainbow strands of her hair. He is besotted and lost in her. Quote, he knew his need for her was greater than anything else. Neither his family nor his next taste of blood mattered as much as knowing that she was safe and within arm's reach. Unquote. He will hold her as she sleeps, something he won't do when she's awake. And in her sleep, she clutches his ampulla and his sweater, saying, quote, you're not lost. I found you. Unquote. She could hear his thoughts, even in her sleep. It was only a matter of time, Deb writes, quote, before Diana knew everything there was to know about him, unquote. Secrets, dark and terrible things. She answers again, quote, I'm brave enough for both of us, unquote. He quietly replies, you'll have to be.
All right. And that is chapter 16. Join us next when we discuss chapter 17.
Thank you, as always, so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode.